Sí, que me kiss here. Because no one else kissed me. My mom used to kiss me there. But first in India in the 70s, you never kissed in public, you know. I was so happy that I was paralyzed.
Welcome to The Lid Is On, our podcast series here at the United Nations. I'm Deanne Penn. In this edition, the amazing story of the man who cycled from India to Europe for love.
We love to share, you know, our love. But the story has its own life and energy, you know.
It's now, a uniting story.
Uniting
so
people.
I think longing for that. We are not separate. Yeah. We are united.
So this United Nations, I feel it's also the platform, you know, it's the only platform on this planet that is uniting people. And we have to do much better. The story is uniting.
Pradyumna Kumar Mahanandia, known as PK, and Charlotte von Schedwin met in India in December 1975. Lotta, as she is known, had driven there from Sweden with a few friends, which, as we'll hear, was not uncommon back then. PK is originally from a small remote jungle village in eastern India, but at the time he was studying art in New Delhi, supporting himself as a portrait artist. Sparks flew and they soon married, but Lotta had to return to her homeland after a month. A year later, PK, who could not afford a plane ticket, sold his belongings and bought a second-hand bike and began a months-long journey towards his beloved, traveling some 7,000 kilometers, or more than 4,000 miles, through 8 countries. He pedaled forward, powered by dreams, love, and ultimately, he found what we're all looking for.
If we don't dream, then dream will not come true. And we must believe where we come from. We come from love. We are proceeding towards love. Why not live with love, with happiness?
More than 40 years on, PK is still in Sweden, and he and Lotta, who now have 2 grown children, are still going strong. PK's story is told in a book called The Amazing Story of the Man Who Cycled from India to Europe for Love. It was written by Swedish journalist and travel writer Per J. Andersson. Per and PK and Lotta were at UN headquarters for a book signing held on the International Day of Happiness, observed on the 20th of March. I caught up with them afterwards. Per starts by explaining how the story began 20 years ago with a simple phone call.
So he called me, and during this phone call, I told him about my interest for India, but he also told me about his life adventure, about his journey, life journey. So I realized after just a few minutes that this is a very good story. Only a week later, I went down to his place in West Sweden and made an interview, which was published in my travel magazine.
That's Vagabond?
Vagabond, yeah. And it was a 2-page story. But then another 10 years passed, and then I went with him to India, to his native village. Then I realized this is worth a book.
PK, what led you to call Per?
He wrote very interesting articles in the magazine I read, and that's the only article about India at that time in Sweden. And I was impressed. Person from the Scandinavian country knows so much, and it'll be nice to meet him and talk to him and why he's so interested. I mean, he's not married to any Indian woman or anything, but he knows so much things. That's why I was curious. And the magazine I was reading, because it was about traveling. And
that's something you know a lot about.
Yeah.
And at that time, Lotta, you guys were already married, but you grew up fascinated by India.
Yeah, I remember back when I was about 10 years old, reading about India at school and watching film, a jungle story with a little boy, elephant boy. My longing to go to India started at a very early age.
And did you always feel that affinity? I mean, even as you grew older?
Yeah, India is always there, especially the state where PK was brought up in the very isolated area where still indigenous people living. My attraction to that is so deep.
That attraction actually led you to travel to India when you were, what, like 18 or so?
I was 19, going to be 20, yeah.
Were you in Sweden or...?
Yeah, a year before I was working in London at a hospital as a nurse. going out with Indian people, going watching Indian films, Indian food, everything. So my really Indian life started in London, 73.
And so when you traveled to India, you traveled to New Delhi, I take it, and that's where you two met. So PK, pick up the story from there.
Yeah, New Delhi from my home is New York to Mexico, maybe?
Yeah,
good. Yeah, so I came all the way to New Delhi to study art and art history. And when she came in 75, at that time, I had a permission to do sketches of tourists on the center of the city and in the evening. So I was studying in the art school, and then in the evening, I was going to earn my bread, to do sketches 3 hours every day, 6 to 9 p.m. She came, she just parked her 100 meters from where I was sitting and doing portrait. She parked her car and then she saw me, and it was a little dark, I think. So it was lamps and I was sitting under the lamp. And I couldn't see her first, but she saw me, some curly hair, like Jimi Hendrix or something. And she came and, can I do my portrait? It's, yes, I did it. And
And now you spoke about the journey from your home state to New Delhi, the distance. But there was also a distance beyond the physical. There was also growing up, the situation that you grew up in.
Yeah, yeah.
You spoke about being considered an untouchable and the pain and the horrible way you were treated.
Yeah, yeah. This mental trauma, you can have such.
Could you tell us about that?
Yeah.
I mean, like when you were a small boy, what was it like going to
because,
school?
Because I discovered that in beginning I didn't know when I was with my family or my own groups, tribes, But the moment I came 3 miles from my village to other areas, when I started school, no one touched me. And then the moment they were touching me, my same age, they were running to the river to wash themselves. We are not allowed touch, the adults also, they behave the same. Am I different? Or that I ask myself. In the beginning, I couldn't speak about it to anyone. But one day, I must tell you, that's a very strong memory I've got. In the morning, we used to have morning prayer, first class to the fifth class. And they were standing very close to each other and they were singing. My place was 5 meters from the first class students, but we are singing the same song, but I was not touching them. It was my place. That one thought came to my mind. Now we are praying to the God. I'm standing here and they're standing close to each other, I'm separate. And when I'm touching, then they're running to the river. And now if I touch them together, all the student people, are they going to take bath? That was my thought in my mind that morning. I couldn't concentrate on the prayer. I was ready. I will touch them, everyone, after the prayer. The moment they finished the prayer singing, then I stretched my hand and touched everyone. First class, second class, and I finished with the teachers also. I touched them, the principal, everyone I touched, And I said, look, what is going to happen? And I saw them. They were angry and hitting them with their feet. And I'm very angry that I didn't respect these rules and like that. And they turned and everyone was running to the river to take bath. Now when I think, I laugh now, but at that time I was crying. I said, I came home and told my mom what happened in the school. And mom knew what the reason, but she didn't tell me the truth. She told me good you have done, my son. And she gave me a hug and kissed me. You have done. All these Hindu people are so dirty. They need bath. They need to wash themselves. And you are helping them, So opposite way, see. And I believed my mom for 4 or 5 years. And next morning I came, I was very cheerful. You people, you're good for your hygiene, that you need bath.
Per, as a journalist and also as a person from Sweden, for your readers at the time, like when you first started writing about India, did you inform them about these sorts of issues that were happening in the country?
Well, yes, I came in contact with the caste system from the beginning. And sometimes I wrote a little bit about it, not that much maybe, but sometimes I had to, because it's an important thing to, if you want to describe the Indian society, you can't go without telling it. But it was also for the first time when I met PK and he told this story to me. That was the first time I really realized in a true way how it could be. on, I mean, on an emotional level, how it could be.
I just want to go back to when you met, and how long did it take for you to realize, wow, this person is somebody really special, I think I want to be with them for the rest of my life?
3 days.
No,
quite speedy.
Really?
Told them, I expressed, it's my point. I mean, I felt, we met first their portrait, and this, certain things happened physically, I felt. I told in the, you know.
Like electricity.
And the second day. And the third day, I expressed in words, in a broken English, and she believed in me, and still now she believes. And I said, she asked me, what we'll do now? She said, I said, just follow me and we'll go to my village and we'll get married. And she did it, and she left her car. She left, gave the key to the friends, and they were shocked, actually. They have been traveling together, 3 adults and 1 baby. We jumped into the train, and 3 days and 3 nights we traveled. And many things happened, but we didn't speak. I was afraid to speak in English. And so I was just watching her, and she was watching the sunset, I remember, sun rising in the train. 3 days we traveled, you know. It was wooden bench, I remember, and I was very afraid because the locomotive, you know, the train, the burning coal, they were coming into the room. I
said,
she had long, beautiful hair, you know. And I said, oh, my God, I didn't sleep. I was watching. Her hair should not burn. So I was keeping my back, I remember, on the window. The window, there was no glass. It was only railings, you know, trying to...
Blow the smoke away?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was very enjoying. We sort of, so we didn't speak very much. And many things happened, mystical, which we cannot explain, actually, also, and scientifically, you know, but we just felt. And, for example, I told her, I thought, I before I taking to my parents, I'll take to my brother on the way, in one different city. Then I thought I will take to her this the masterwork, stone carving of Middle Ages there in near the coast, because she likes art and culture and, you know, sculpture. So I said she will like this. So I'll surprise her about this, that area, how the people have done this sun temples and stone carving. So I took her, and I remember before going to this sun temple, I hold her hand, I remember, please close your eyes, and now you can open in front of that. And I was a little back, and she was looking and looking and looking, and I was in the back. Oh, she liked it very much. But she turned to me, I saw she was crying, and she became red, and I said, oh my God, I hurt somewhere, her feeling something. I'm sorry, if I thought you would be glad to see this, and please excuse me. So then she told me that this is tears of joy. She said, she will tell actually why she was crying there. You know?
Lotta, let us know.
Yeah, that was very emotional feeling for me. Because as I said before, I was staying in London for a year, and there were some people in that nursery home. I collected a calendar, pictures from India, and I just pulled out one picture, and that was a stone card wheel and small anaphons at the bottom. So when I saw it there, that was a sign 2 years before.
And see. Give me a kiss here. Because no one has kissed me. My mom used to kiss me there. But first in India in the 70s, you never kissed in public, you know. When I was so happy that I was paralyzed.
Well, I'm glad you're no longer paralyzed, because what would I do? I wouldn't be able to talk to you. And now, so when was it that you had to make the journey to see her? Because now you went to his home state, you guys got married. And what happened? You had to go back to Sweden?
Mm-hmm. I had to go back because I took leave from my work, and I promised to stay till June, July for that work. I just told Pika I'll be back in August the same year. But circumstances, and my mom said, you finish education and you write letters and let him finish his school, then you can decide. So that happened. He actually finished his school, and that was in February. In 77, he got the bike and started cycling to the west.
Whoa.
Okay, so I just want to ask Per now, because Per is a journalist and Per is a travel writer and Per knows how it is like to travel in India. I mean, not that you don't, but, no. You know, but what does that entail? Traveling from the West to India by plane is a long journey. Traveling from India to the West by bike, what kind of journey would that be?
Oh, well, today it sounds maybe a little bit more strange than it was in the 70s and even in the early 80s. Because it was Middle East was a safer place at that time. And it was also a culture of traveling. When I started traveling in the early 80s, it was more going by a plane. But before that, in the 70s, it was hitchhiking all the way from Europe to India. Many people did that.
The hippie trail.
Yeah. And or going by train and buses. It was a part of a movement or a trend or what you say. I mean, I guess Lotta was part of a kind of a travel movement.
And even though that's a trend and people were doing it and traveling still, I mean, a bike from India, going making the reverse route. Come on, you got to tell us about that. You
know? There are many people are traveling. I met in a corner place, it's called that center of New Delhi. The people I met, they were traveling by bicycle. In end of 60s, it started, after Beatles, the music group. So 60s, 70s were very popular, you know. So I met so many people. I had tea with them and I did their portrait and they told me they have been going by motorcycle. But it was mostly the Western young people are coming to India, but not other ways around.
Yeah. You were not normal. You were odd.
And how long did it take you?
4 months and 3 weeks.
And in that time, you were writing to Lotta? I mean, there's no Facebook. There's
not
like your kids were talking
about. Not Facebook. Yeah. No. it's only letters. You know, it's called post restante. She wrote me to Kabul, for example, in the head office, post office. I used to go and show my passport, and the postman. Know that my name is P and M, my family name. Then he will give M with a big bag of thousands of letters, starts with M, and with P, another bag. And then I will open and search my letter, which is mine, and then it takes one day almost at the post office, you know. So,
and it worked.
It worked that way. Yeah.
And how many countries did you have to cycle
just
through?
Afghanistan, Iran, Turkey, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, Austria, Germany, Denmark, and Sweden. But I hitchhiked, as it's written also in the book, in trucks. At that time, it was heavily trafficked, that hippie trail. So in Turkey, for example, the truck drivers were very friendly, and I was doing their portrait and giving me food, and I was jumping in their trucks. At night, they used to park and they used to sleep in the truck, and I was sleeping under the truck. And then morning, and they used to tell me, now we should move, and then I should pick up my things and like that.
I was thinking one lesson of this story is also that it would be nearly impossible today. Not because it's impossible to travel to India and travel from India to Sweden, but this land journey, I mean, overland journey. Mm. I mean, you need visas. You need visas that time also, but not everywhere. And especially Europe was more open. Today, Europe has a wall against East.
And there's also conflict in some of the places.
Of course, there's also conflict.
And Lotta, so what was it like waiting for your young man to come to Sweden to be with you?
I knew that he was on his way, and I warned him, actually, through one letter, that he should not go on his own. He should go with somebody. I was overwhelmed that he was on this nice road. And actually, I felt so happy for myself going this road, so the opportunity for him to do it as well, because, as you said, meeting these people, culture... Mm-hmm. I mean, going through Afghanistan at the time, you could drive for hours without seeing any people. It was so fascinating. So I'm very happy to have these memories with me.
But you were a little worried when he started his journey.
Little bit.
That's an understatement, I believe, right? And the book had a launch here at the UN, but it's already been translated, I believe, from what I heard, into 14 languages.
That's true.
And just recently now into English. What does it mean for you to have a book signing, I should say, at the United Nations?
Oh, that's a dream come true. That's absolutely the best place, I think, because it's an international environment, and this is a kind of international story. I mean, it has no borders. It's a story about love over borders. So UN is a very good place.
Mm. We agree fully. Yeah. We are very happy this moment here.
And what was it like? You had lots of people asking you questions. They prying into your lives like I'm doing right now, and things like that.
We love to share, you know, our love. I feel sometimes when I studied about this in the school, I studied Abraham Lincoln, for example, and he talked about democracy. So I feel our story has become the same like what he said about democracy is by the people, for the people, of the people. So I feel our story is if you go internet, so many people have written. We never, as like you are interviewing, many people didn't interview, they never met us, but they're inspired by taking from other sources, you know, and writing, you know. But the story has its own life and energy, you know.
It's a uniting story.
Uniting
so I
people.
Think longing for that. We are not separate. Yeah. We are united. Yeah. This is the whole meaning of I feel.
Yeah. So this United Nation, I feel, is also the platform, you know. It's the only platform on this planet that it are uniting people. And we have to do much better. The story is uniting.
Your story really is a story of love on so many levels. Per, it's your story of a love of a good story as a journalist. Of course, the love that you two have for each other. And from what else I can see, the love that the three of you collectively have for India.
Oh, yes.
And I'm curious to know, what do you hope people take away?
I think hope, in some way, hope. And have a positive way of thinking and not to be too pessimistic. I think there is a kind of general feeling in the world, in the West anyway, not that much in India, I guess, but in the West today, very pessimistic feeling about that the world is going down, falling apart. But I think this story could show that there is hope and there could be more hope and that the world could be a little bit better if you behave like the persons in this story.
Your perspective?
Yes, we have to dream more. If we don't dream, then dream will not come true. You know? And we must believe where we come from. We come from love. We are proceeding towards love. So why not live with love, with happiness?
Mm. And Lotte, any final words?
Yeah, I fully agree with these two gentlemen here beside me. Hopefully this will just see to the human values. What it means to be human is also a great chance that we humans are united.
That was Pradyumna Kumar Mahanandia, known as PK, his wife Charlotte von Schedvin, and the journalist Per J. Anderson talking to me, Deanne Penn, in our studio here at UN headquarters. And that brings us to the end of this episode of our podcast series, The Lid Is On. We'll be back with more extraordinary personal stories soon. Thank you very much for listening.